This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Resource Center. I'm Maya Tan. And today, we're looking at things to know before starting your e-commerce venture in Southeast Asia. Here to tell us more are two e-commerce experts, Jingyi Fu, CEO of Tricosenity, who creates and designs e-commerce sites for clients, and CK Wong, co-founder of E-commerce Milo, a great resource for everything and anything to do with e-commerce. We were looking at what the outlook is, and it's quite positive at the moment. There are lots of opportunities in the market. People are open to online transactions, and we looked at some other statistics on your list. What's next?
E-marketplace, we did discuss about this. And of course, for e-marketplace itself, it's a big boys game, right? And those are the platform providers.
We're looking at the Lazadas and Zaloras.
Correct. 11th Street, and so. Local one will be Lelong again, right? And of course, as a business itself, maybe this is a very good opportunity for you to tap on their platform, right? Because the entry barrier is very low, right? It's very easy to start. And even the margin itself can be quite low, right? And of course, this is a very good platform for you to test the products. Let's say you are new to e-commerce, you just want to start something online, right? There are two options. Either you set up your own online store, which technically require more resources, right? And the easier path will be marketplace, right? Where you can simply start a store there, right? And then you can try with different products, right? Let's say today, I have a dream to sell socks again, right? Sell socks. So I have this vision to sell socks. Then instead of setting out my own, maybe I type into one of the marketplace or even a couple of them. You can try in different, because every marketplace, they have their own strength, right? A bit different kind of audience and different kind of offerings, right?
So it's very hard to tell, though, because they sell anything and everything, like Lazada. Right. You can pretty much find everything on it, from a lipstick to a hair dryer to a blender or a vacuum cleaner. It's quite vast. Mm. So how does Lazada do something like give something different?
For me personally, I will buy from multiple websites. Mm. Right, although they carry different various kind of categories, but if you really observe, right, each of them, they are strong in a certain area or certain category, and most of them, they're also running different kind of promo, different kind of discount, right? So let's say for electronics, I'll buy from this site. For fashion, I'll buy from a different site. For kid stuff, baby stuff, I'll buy from another site. So I guess each of them, they have their own strength. So depends on what kind of categories you are selling. Maybe you should do some homework and check out what they are strong at. Mm-hmm. And once you list, let's say back to my socks thing, after like a few months trying, cannot make it. Maybe it's very easy for me to change to a different category.
I do want to share a story about one of my favorite products, which is the photo book. I think when I first encountered the photo book, it was a new idea to me that I could actually just upload my pictures onto this thing and then being able to have it printed out. And that was, I can't remember how many years ago, I found it on Groupon. So again, it can be considered as a marketplace of some sort, with a deal site. Mm. So after that, they started having it on their own website. So now that they have reached out to so many consumers, such as myself, I can now go directly to their own Photobook Malaysia website and make purchases on my own without having to go through any other e-commerce platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, so that's a great way for them to actually get started.
You're right. You can build your brand from there, build your customer base from there. But do take note that some of the marketplace, they don't review the customer information for merchants.
Right.
For example, emails. Yeah.
So the advantage is making use of their infrastructure, which is already in place, and also hitting a wider target audience. They do a lot of marketing as well.
Yeah, they do a lot of marketing. They have existing customers, existing members, existing subscribers.
Customer service.
Yeah. But I guess for if you are serious about your business, this is not a long-term solution. Right. End of day, like what Qingyi mentioned just now, the photo book case.
Yep.
End of day, you still want people to go back to your brand, go back to your own offerings, and instead of going through a third party, if you care about your brands.
And do they take a commission as well?
For marketplace. Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
They do, right?
Some they take fixed fees. Most of them, or not, if not all of them, they actually take a percentage of the transaction. It can be consignment. It can be drop shipping as well, right? So drop shipping means to say that you receive the order, you ship from your own, right? You don't need to put your stocks into the marketplace warehouse. Not all marketplace, they have their own warehouse. So some of them, if they have, they will encourage you to consign right there, so that the whole experience is actually faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you get to like photo book stage, there's nothing to stop you from still having the marketplace option as well as your own e-commerce option, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think ultimately it also depends on how you intend to fulfill the order. For example, the photo book shopping experience requires you to actually download a tool from their website in order to design the photo book that you want. Mm. So you have the freedom to choose what type of layout, and then you have to upload your photographs from your vacation, and then you can choose what type of cover, hard cover, soft cover. And that tool that they allow you to download has all these interesting features, you know, that enhances the whole experience of creating your own photo book. And it's only at the end when you say, okay, now I want to check out, and then you upload the whole thing back to their website. And that's when they start processing your order and printing your book for you.
And that's giving more options compared to if you had done it through e-marketplace.
I don't think the e-marketplace would have been able to do all of that, mm-hmm. because they only allow you to say, okay, buy this product, right? And then ship this product. You can't have all these features that allow you to design your own product.
By selling via marketplace, you will not have much 100% control of your business. Right. Whereas selling via your own branded store, your own online store, that one you have 100% control, right? And of course, the entry barrier is higher. But if you really want to build your own brand, you know, for example, the photo book case again, that's the way to go. Because by selling in other marketplace, of course, there's a margin thing, right? That's in place, right? And this margin is defined by the marketplace. It's not defined by you.
It's a bit like departmental store, you know, where you put your products in, say, Robinson's or Isetan,
exactly.
Versus having your own retail outlet in a mall.
Mm. Yeah, it depends on who needs who more, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, still, if marketplace is more like, you are more like a supplier, you know, of course, if your business is more like that kind of a supplier thingy, then marketplace is the right channel for you. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. What's next?
Logistics in Malaysia actually is getting much better currently, and there are pretty much options. There are a lot of options to ship your products, and but the only thing is in terms of the shipping cost is not that low, right, compared to some much more advanced market. Right.
And I think the general expectation from consumers in Malaysia is that if you're ordering from a Malaysian site, you don't expect to pay any shipping. So that is a cost that's borne by the retailer.
Yeah, some retailers, they actually, you know, it's good to provide free shipping, but of course above a certain amount, threshold. And I guess in terms of shipping fees, some consumers, they are willing to pay, especially if this item is rare. Let's say they are willing to pay, shop from overseas website and pay for the shipping fee because I cannot buy this product here. You know, they don't care about the price, they don't care about shipping fee. You know, this is one of the factors. But in terms of Malaysia, if you are talking about common goods, you know, then of course shipping fee is a very important factor to overcome.
What else have you observed in terms of consumer expectations?
Hmm. I think generally consumer expects that the goods arrive intact, you know, not wet and dripping, broken. And that I think from what I hear from some of the logistics providers is that they also find that consumers have challenges receiving the product. Sometimes they're not at home, or it's being sent to a high-rise unit, such as an office block or a condo block, and that, you know, nobody knows where it was addressed to. So I think that might be one of the things that the consumer expects, that the logistic provider is flexible and intelligent enough to ask for this information before it is being sent.
Mm-hmm. And also sometimes if they go via Post Laju, what you get is a postcard saying you have to go to the warehouse or to the central.
That's right. Yes, that's when, because they're not
always at home. Ship to office is the best way.
Yeah, exactly. What other challenges are happening in the area of logistics?
I think in terms of shipping speed, Malaysia is quite fast. right? And most of the people nowadays, they expect, like, you know, you buy today, you expect to receive, like, tomorrow or the next day. In fact, recently I went to US, so I bought something from Amazon, right? And I didn't pay premium for that shipping, for that order. And in fact, it takes like a few days to arrive, right?
So it came back before you came back.
Yeah. So I have to pay extra to actually expedite that delivery. So if compared back to Malaysia, I think Malaysia is quite good. You know, most of the time, you know, even with free shipping or even if I pay additional 6 ringgit or 8 ringgit for the shipping fee, and most of the time the goods arrive on time. Even sometimes it really arrive quite fast, right? So I think depending on which seller, which platform they are buying, I think the shopping experience in general is quite good.
Right.
Yeah. I also see improvements in food delivery, so edible products and so on, like groceries, as well as I'm not sure if you've heard of this service called Food Panda. So if you order food, they deliver to you still warm because they have certain containers and boxes that keeps the food warm, and so that by the time they send it to you, it's still warm enough to eat.
What other considerations should retailers look at, for example, dealing with customs, especially if you're selling to people around the region? What other problems are there in logistics for retailers?
For cross-border logistics is the biggest challenge. In terms of marketing, in terms of operation, I don't think there will be much different. But in terms of logistics, yes, that's the major challenge why not many are really successful yet in terms of cross-border. But yet, cross-border is a very big opportunity. Right? Imagine that you are not only dealing with Malaysians, you're not dealing with locals, but you're dealing with worldwide. But again, I guess it's still back to volume. Right. If you want to do cross border, if you don't have volume, who is going to provide you a very good rates? Right. So still back to scaling up your business first. Get more orders, scale up your traffic, scale up the traffic from overseas and everything. And then when you have the volume, then I think it's easier to negotiate to get competitive rates. Right, in terms of cross-border custom clearance and all those.
Yeah, I think it would be also useful to understand a little bit more about the different taxes and custom guidelines on different types of products. You know, like if you're shipping pharmaceutical products or medicinal products versus live animals and foods
like
and so on.
Organisms and stuff.
Yes, so there are all kinds of different tax categories for different types of products that you can ship from one country to another. Even within Southeast Asia, I think there is no standard to say that, you know, we're not quite like the EU where there is an acceptable regional tax tariff rate. So each country is different. So it really, really depends on what the merchant wants to sell.
And this one, you really need to talk to the right people in the logistic industry, especially when you have volume. And a lot of merchants, they actually spend a lot of resources, right, talking to a lot of parties and find out the best solution.
Best rates, best coverage.
Correct. So you don't have anything like one-size-fits-all kind of thing, right? It's based on what you need and what your supplier can supply to you.
For example, there are some logistic providers who offer the delivery of frozen goods. And not many people offer that, apparently. So there are logistic providers that do not have the ability to deliver your product if your product is a frozen good. Yeah, so that's the thing that I think what CK means is that you do have to do your homework and find out.
Mm. Okay. I'm speaking to Ching Yi Fu, CEO of Tricor Sanity, and CK Wong, co-founder of e-commerce Milo. And we're talking about things you need to know before starting your venture in Southeast Asia. When we come back, we'll look at more on CK's list on Resource Center, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, this is Maya Tan and you're listening to Resource Center. Today we're looking at things to know before starting your e-commerce venture in Southeast Asia. I've got two experts with me, Ching Yi Fu, CEO of Tricor Sanity, and of course you develop and design websites including e-commerce sites for clients, and CK Wong, founder of e-commerce Milo, which is a website and a great resource on everything to do with e-commerce. What's the next point?
Okay, back to cross-border again, right? Of course, for Malaysia case, maybe it's more relevant that we look at neighboring countries, right? Like Singapore and Indonesia and Brunei even. The reason my cyber seal, actually this year is different from last year. This is the second time our local government or MDEC, right, is actually have a new agenda, right, to help boosting local e-commerce players, right? And this new agenda for 2015 is actually to encourage sellers to penetrate neighboring countries. And MDEC has shortlisted Indonesia, Singapore, and Brunei as the key markets for local merchants. And the reason why is because the barrier is lower, right? First of all, in terms of logistics, not so far away. Right? Second is we are closer, right, in terms of the language, right? For example, we don't have problem understanding, or they don't have problem understanding English or Malay and Indonesia is a bit close compared to Thailand, right? Thai language. And this is the second reason. And third is also Southeast Asia as a whole is a growing market. You know, like what I mentioned just now, the potential is there. So these three reasons, this is why MDEC, you know, or MySubSale this year, you know, is trying to help local merchants, you know, reaching out to foreign countries.
What was the response like?
Yeah, overall response, this year MySubSale did more than 100 million. For 5 days event, right? Last year was 60 over.
Quite significant.
But last year was 3 days event, so this year was five. This year was 5 days, and of course, back to the market sentiments for this year is actually not so great, right?
Yeah, the economic downturn.
Correct. Still, that's why 100 over million is still quite a good and positive result.
I guess with the downturn, Malaysians and even Southeast Asians alike, we kind of go back to our love for the bargain.
Yeah,
we're always looking for the best bargain, right? And I guess perhaps events like MySubSale help, you know, in that instance.
Correct.
They do well because of that.
Yeah, correct. And also because this is a combined efforts by most of the online seller and or even marketplace. Right, so this is a grand event and everyone is doing the marketing together. So, you know, it's just like the Malaysia, the retail one, the mega sale, right? So
yeah,
this is the online version.
The nationwide sale. It's the online version. Okay, what's next on your list?
So the next point, of course, everyone loves discount. Right? You shop online.
So it's connected.
Yeah. But in long run, discount is not shouldn't be the only thing to attract your customers. Right. Of course, for a start, maybe you need discount to entice them to shop from you for the first time.
I guess it depends on what kind of brand you are as well.
Correct.
And how you give value.
Correct.
So, say, for example, you're a luxury brand, then discount is attractive. But if you often do it, then I think it will dampen your image a little
devalue
bit.
Devalue the brand.
Yeah. And there are also brands who are adamant about not giving discount. For example, at Topshop, you get a 10% if you're a member. But like at Zara, they've never given any discounts apart from sale time. So it depends on what works for your brand.
Yeah, exactly.
Has discount sort of pushed e-commerce along quite well?
Yeah, this is the main factors why, you know, these e-marketplaces, they have grown so fast. Part of the reason also, they provide a lot of discount, right? And even not only coupons, you know, they even subsidize the product, right? It's like below the market value. It's not all products are like selective products on selected times. They do subsidize. Right, and to get the sales in. So I would say this is a short-term gain, right, to get people familiarized shopping from their website. But in the long run, I believe the most important thing is the experience, the whole service that you provide to your customers.
At this stage, right, I think e-commerce offers the opportunity that retail commerce is unable to do, in the sense that you can gamify or make the whole shopping experience very interesting, because you're able to collect an immense amount of data. You can see when somebody comes online, you can see when they come back, you can see how often they come back, you can see how long they stay, what type of products they browse. So you can make certain type of suggestions or offer specific type of discounts to specific type of buyers.
For the next hour, you get an extra 15% off.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Or if you come back 5 days in a row, you get 5 ringgit off or something like that, which I think it's very challenging to implement in a retail shop, but relatively easy to implement on e-commerce.
What's the investment like? Is it extra effort in terms of programming? And
yeah, that would definitely take more effort in programming. But like what CK was saying, if you are on a platform, say a Lazada type of platform, you can pull that together, right? So platforms can offer that benefit to all their merchants and say that if you, you know, maybe I'm going to run a campaign for electronics. So if you come and shop in the electronics section 5 days in a row, I'm going to give you a free item, right? So that one feature may cost a bit of money, but it benefits everyone in the retail, in the category of electronics.
So that's a really interesting thing to keep in mind, how you can be innovative in terms of customizing the data that you have,
yes,
and using it to your advantage for sales.
Yep.
Show the right product at the right time. Like some of the marketing, new marketing concept, you know, like hungry marketing.
Hungry marketing?
Hunger marketing or hungry marketing. In Chinese, it's jia xing xiao. This is, you can just take a look at Xiaomi, right? How they sell their phones, you know, in terms of like, you know, they only offer like limited stocks at a super price, at a limited time. So everyone go and grab, you know, try to grab, and a lot of people cannot grab it, and it became a topic, you know, it became viral, you know, those kind of things.
What's next on your list, the last point?
The last point that we wanted to talk about was the talent pool. I think this is a topic that we come across in a lot of discussions, and not just about e-commerce, that we do need more talented people. So likewise, in e-commerce, you still need to have your software engineers, your IT people that can help you scale, your UX or UI designers that can help you put together all the stuff that we talked about.
That's user
experience.
Right.
So to be able to design a shopping experience that is enriching and interesting and exciting and enticing to the buyer in order to make them purchase, I think that is a skill that people need to have in order to venture into e-commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you would probably want to have someone who can do a lot of data crunching. So while you're collecting all this information about your traffic, how many people are coming to your site, which pages are they visiting, how long are they staying in these pages, your data people need to be able to make sense of all that information and then decide and analyze and say, okay, now that we see this data, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to leverage on the information that we have and create new features that make sense to the users? And then after you do that, do you have the engineers who can actually execute on your new ideas? So I think all of that needs to be in place.
Right. And it's a worthwhile investment, especially if people start to like your site because the experience is a lot more superior, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of data, you know, how sophisticated is it? For example, I may be on this website looking at this one particular item or looking at my shopping cart, but it's a tab that I've kept open for 36 hours. Is the system able to tell you?
Yeah, I think to some extent you can. There are different types of technologies that can detect browser activity, whether
movement,
it's idle,
of the cursors.
Correct, and then also engagement points, such as what are the things you click on. So on a page, you may have different parts of the page. You might click on more details. You might click on more colors for the same product. So people might see that, okay, looks like red seems to be a more popular color because everybody wants to see how the same product looks like in red as opposed to other colors. So, but you need someone to actually sift through that data and make that analysis to say that, okay, this product seems to have a lot more inquiries.
Yeah,
in
you
red.
Need to stock up on red.
And I think in terms of customer service as well, platforms like Taobao, from what I hear, is that they have a very fast response rate to things that you have left in your shopping cart but haven't checked out. So they actually message you. They use channels like chat and things like that to actually get in touch with the customer and say, why haven't you checked me out because you still have all these items in your basket?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because...
I know Malaysia Airlines does that as well. For example, you go through a sort of an online booking but you don't go through with the entire process. They'll send you an email saying, you know, you haven't concluded your flight purchase.
Nice,
would you like to continue with that? And they take you right back to that page. So
yeah.
I think that's really helpful.
Yes, it is. It is very, it's a very pleasant experience for the buyer as well.
Because it saves you time from going back there and putting all those things back in your basket or
yeah.
going to choose your flight and all that, right?
Yeah, I guess in terms of talent, it's always an issue. not only in this industry, I think, right?
Yeah,
so,
all industries.
I would like to touch more on the point of, let's say, traditional business, right? Be it retailers or small businesses. And I could actually see a lot of challenges on their side because they, first of all, they don't really treat e-commerce as a new business or as a separate business. And most of them, they would like to tie it together with their retail, whereas there's a lot of conflicts. Right. So let's say for bigger retailers, I guess one of the best solution is to treat this as a new business and invest into people, hire talent, right, which is really familiar with e-commerce, and to advise traditional business on how to do online, right. For most cases, you cannot just put your whole offline to online, right, for retailers. So I guess they might want to look into a different perspective, and it has to start with the talent. Right, get the right talent to help your business, be it your in-house, be it you outsource to someone, right? You have to get talents to help you in e-commerce. Because e-commerce online is really different from retail, yeah. In terms of execution, even in terms of marketing, you know, the same, you get used to advertise on a newspaper, you know, and TV, let's say, you know. But end of the day, when you do online, you know, you might want to consider a different way of advertising, you know. Yeah. Most of people, they leverage on digital marketing, you know, and
you can look at SEO and try to leverage the data that you have, and as you say, you know, create interactive or innovative and customized experiences.
Correct.
Ching Yi Fu, CEO of Trackersenity, and CK Wong, founder of E-commerce Milo. Thank you guys. This has been Resource Center. I'm Maya Tan on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.